Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Vox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 6th of May. My name is Ross and I'm compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, with news being selected and read by Ali Provan and Christine Churchill. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be around 5:30 a.m. with the sunset being around 8:30 p.m. The copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawville. Here, there will be some instructions on how to listen to Vox Talk using your Alexa device, and at the end of this edition, you will hear how to access Vox Talk online. Enjoy.
Notice to listeners of Vox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Vox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Vox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to Vox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Vox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Vox Talk and we will try to help.
Residents at a Cardham care home have been inspired to set up a new project in the home's garden. During a discussion at a monthly residents' meeting at Bry's Meadow Lodge care home, residents said they wanted to add cress to their egg sandwiches after discussing the menu offered by the in-house chef. After senior carer Amanda Strover suggested they grow their own, residents Helen Clear and Brenda Springate set about growing the plant in the home's garden room. Ms. Clear made sure the seeds were never parched while Ms. Bringate took charge of their daily watering. Ms. Clear said, I enjoy eating our own egg and cress sandwiches. It makes me feel like I've contributed. Ms. Bringate added, I've been telling my family all about it. Their efforts paid off and the cress was harvested and added to the sandwiches by head chef Debbie Watkinson-Pope. Ms. Strover said, it has been so lovely to see Helen and Brenda's joy in growing their own fresh and delicious cress themselves. They have really taken to the ownership of the role they play in the home. Ms. Watkinson-Pope added, it's great to have our own supply. I'm glad the ladies are enjoying growing it.
A baby boy was born twice after surgeons performed a rare cancer surgery which involved lifting his mother's womb out of her body during pregnancy. Lucy Isaac, 32, was 12 weeks pregnant with son Rafferty when she was diagnosed with stage 2 ovarian cancer following a routine ultrasound scan. With the pregnancy too advanced to allow keyhole surgery and an increased risk of the cancer spreading if they held off, a decision was made to lift Mrs. Isaac's womb out of her pelvis with her baby still inside. The five-hour operation, which took place at the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford last October, allowed surgeons to remove the cancerous cells on both ovaries. The team of 15 medical professionals removed the womb from her abdomen while keeping it attached to the uterine artery, left fallopian tube and cervix. Two members of the team held Mrs. Isaac's womb in their hands during the entire procedure, with the baby's heart rate and temperature being monitored along with Mrs. Isaacs. Her womb was also wrapped in a warm, sterile, saline pack to mimic being inside the body and to keep it at the right temperature. Mr. Hooman Soleimani Majd, who headed the surgical team, said this was the first time he had done the operation on stage 2 cancer. Mrs. Isaac's womb was kept outside her body for 2 hours, twice the time of his normal procedures. Baby Rafferty Isaac was then born safely in January this year. Mrs. Isaac said, "I had no symptoms before the diagnosis. I feel incredibly lucky that I was not only diagnosed in time, but also able to undergo the procedure without jeopardising my pregnancy. My husband Adam and I were made aware of the risks. We had faith in Mr. Hooman Soleimani Majd and the team. I am immensely grateful to everyone involved in saving me and my baby. It was especially emotional for the family, as Adam Isaac had only been able to start a family after being given a kidney by a friend in 2022. Mr. Isaac added, "To finally hold Rafferty in our arms after everything we have been through was the most amazing moment." Mr. Hooman Soleimani Majd said it was a very complex and challenging operation, and added, "When baby Rafferty visited us 2 weeks after being born, it was an immensely emotional moment for me and the team. This achievement not only highlights the advancements in medical science, but also reinforces our commitment to providing innovative and life-saving procedures. I am grateful for the trust placed in us and proud of the collaborative effort that made this possible."
A South Oxfordshire jam factory has submitted plans for 2 new buildings as it looks to expand. McNeil's Fine Foods Limited lodged the scheme for Cross Lane Fruit Farm in Dog Lane near Rutherfield Grays. The company was established in 1983, producing homemade marmalades, preserves, honey and chutneys. The applicants operate a small batch luxury produce company selling at local farmers' markets, online, farm shops and in high-end department stores. The produce is grown, picked and stored at the site. The development will also create 6 new jobs. So far, no public comments in support or objection have been sent to South Oxfordshire District Council. In the scheme's planning statement, it said, "Planning permission is sought for the erection of 2 buildings to support the expansion of the jam processing facilities on the site. The proposed jam processing unit comprises of a labelling / packing room, production room, wash area, dry goods storeroom, freezer and staff room. The second building will be utilised as an office. The proposal will employ a maximum of 6 staff, with 3 existing staff already working at the farm. The buildings have been strategically positioned near the existing cluster of buildings adjacent to the application site and have been designed with the rural and historic landscape in mind to ensure that they integrate well with rural landscape and the built environment."
A new planning application has been submitted for the development of the UK's first vertiport near Bicester. Skyports Infrastructure, a leader in vertiport infrastructure for the advanced air mobility industry, is building its testbed at Bicester Motion. This includes a compact 160 square metre passenger terminal that will be used for testing ground infrastructure and flight operations. The application for the signage was submitted to Cherwell District Council by Bicester Motion on April the 7th. Construction of the vertiport began at the end of last year. At the time, Skyport's chief executive, Duncan Walker, said, "With spades in the ground and the site beginning to take shape, today we are one step closer to delivering our vertiport at Bicester Ocean. Our thanks to the project and construction teams for their work so far, and we look forward to opening the facility in a few months' time to continue our efforts to develop and scale electric air taxi services." Daniel Gagan, Chief Executive Officer of Bicester Ocean, added, "It's great to see Skyport's vertiport being built right here in Bicester. Once complete, it will support vertical takeoff and landing aircraft testing as part of advanced air mobility innovation. We're proud to support this vertiport testbed as part of our strategic vision to integrate both traditional and vertical aviation operations from our airfield and boost pioneering future mobility discovery. The facility is being developed under the Advanced Mobility Ecosystem Consortium and supported by the Innovate UK's Future Flight Challenge. It will play a key role in testing electric vertical takeoff and landing flight operations, ground infrastructure and air traffic management. It is hoped this will support the next generation of electric low-noise aviation in the UK. The vertiport will be adjacent to Bicester Ocean's existing general aviation grass runways. Once finished, an inauguration event will be held and will include demonstration flights by Vertical Aerospace."
Oxford United Women ended the season with a 2-0 victory at home against Hashtag United, ensuring a fifth place finish in the Southern Premier Division. Nicole Barrett scored her first league goal for the club just 3 minutes into the game, collecting the ball and driving forward before applying the finish. 5 minutes before half time, Phoebe Poole went close to doubling the lead, but shot wide. A minute into first half stoppage time, the lead was doubled though, as Barrett found the net with a 30-yard free kick. Hughes manager Sam Rose said, "Two goals and a clean sheet against a really physical and direct team, a good team. We're really pleased to end the season on such a performance. I think we were the much better team in the first half, obviously 2-0 up at half time, and then hashtag do what hashtag do, which is put you under loads of pressure in the second half with lots of balls into the box and crosses, and we've defended to a player outstandingly. It was a great effort, the work rate, and it was a performance full of guts and heart." On Barrett, Rose said, "Our right wing back was on a hat trick. She performed really well. She'll be over the moon and it'll be great for her confidence. But I think every player on the pitch has been through it."
Blenheim Palace is celebrating National Gardening Week with the launch of Ask Andy. The initiative allows visitors to seek advice from head gardener Andy Mills on their horticultural issues. Visitors can submit their questions by dropping them into special post boxes located in the walled garden and near the water terraces. Mr. Mills will select a few questions to answer on Blenheim Palace's YouTube and Instagram channels. Mr. Mills said, "I love passing on knowledge and tips. It's how we all become better gardeners, me included. It will be fascinating to see what questions visitors send my way." The gardens at Blenheim Palace are currently undergoing a 10-year restoration and transformation project under Mr. Mills' supervision. This includes the reintroduction of many features that have been lost over the last three centuries. This May, the palace is allowing dogs into its courtyards, former gardens and walled gardens, in addition to the wider parkland. With wildlife and livestock roaming in some areas, they must be kept on a short lead at all times. Dogs are not allowed inside the palace or adventure play area. Tickets for Blenheim Palace can be booked on the palace's website.
An Oxfordshire private school wants to create a quintessential English cricket ground on former equestrian land. Cranford School in Molesford has submitted plans for the land off Wallingford Road in Cholsey. The scheme includes a refreshment building, container/store, replacement access and associated parking and landscaping. So far, no public comments in support or objection have been submitted to South Oxfordshire District Council. In the application's planning statement, it said, Cranford School is an independent co-educational day school for circa 600 pupils aged 3 to 18 years of age. As the number of pupils have grown at Cranford, the existing facilities for all sports have become increasingly stretched. Cricket in particular has grown exponentially in popularity at Cranford, and whilst the school can host matches and training on reduced scale cricket fields, it is not possible for the pupils to experience a full-sized cricket pitch other than when playing away.
Ornamental Second World War grenades are yet to be returned to an Oxford history enthusiast almost a month after they were confiscated from his house by police. A householder in Marlborough Road was arrested on Monday, April the 7th, in front of his neighbours after armed police raiding a next-door property saw his display of ornamental German and Soviet grenades. After briefly detaining him, Thames Valley Police released the man without charge and declared his collection safe. A spokesperson for the police said the munitions on further investigation were found to be ornamental hand grenades which were not live and were not illegal. Later that week, an officer returned his keys, including a decorative Uzi bullet, but the householder, who has asked not to be named, is yet to be reunited with his valuable collection. The man is keeping his name private after being left upset by the experience and has said that not having his items returned is stopping him from moving on. Since they delivered his keys, he has heard nothing from the police and he has abandoned any ambitions of returning the prized items to his windowsill. The items were purchased over a number of years, mainly from London antique shops, and altogether cost several hundred pounds. Police have refused to comment on the case, saying it would not be appropriate to do so. Meanwhile, the man's city councillor representative, Naomi Waite, has offered her support in getting the items back. The Labour councillor said, I hope it's not the case that a lengthy process is required, and if it is, I would certainly encourage the Thames Valley Crime Commissioner to review this so it's as easy as possible. I know our local officers work very hard, and I'd always much rather see them out in neighbourhoods combating crime. Though he remains keen to reunite with his collection, which includes a German Stielhandgranate stick grenade and a Soviet Union F1 fragmentation grenade, pursuing the matter could be a distraction from other matters. He said, if I complained, I could get them back, but I have too much going on in my life at the moment.
Gary Rowett believes Michel Helic is the best January signing he has made during his managerial career. Centre-back Helic joined Oxford United from Huddersfield Town in January and has made a huge impression on the team. The 29-year-old has scored 4 goals in 19 Sky Bet Championship starts since joining United, with his latest strike coming as the Ewes secured safety at the weekend. Ben Nelson gave United a first-half lead at home against Sunderland, with Helic doubling the advantage with an instinctive volley to start the second period. Cameron Branigan struck a powerful 20-yard free kick, which Black Cats goalkeeper Anthony Patterson could only parry, with Helic first on the scene to finish the loose ball. Rowett, who boosted his championship promotion bid with Derby County in the 2017-18 season, with the signings of Cameron Jerome and Casey Palmer, ranks Hellick as his best January signing. He said he's been an absolutely incredible signing. He's a great guy, he's a great leader. You see the goals he's got that have been absolutely vital. I don't think I've personally made a better signing in January in my whole career. He's been immense.
Oxford actress Florence Pugh has praised Marvel for giving her a second chance while attending the London premiere of the new movie Thunderbolts. Speaking at the screening of the film last week, the 29-year-old said she felt a lot of pressure over her role as assassin Yelena Belova. The Oxford-born star said the pressure stemmed from the fact that fans of the superhero franchise already had a perception of her character before she stepped into the role. Ms. Pugh, who wore a black dress to the event, said there's a lot of pressure when you're doing any Marvel creation. I think what you have to balance and understand is that the character you're playing has been loved by people before you even stepped into those shoes. And even if Marvel had given you the opportunity to give it a go, people will have their own preconceived ideas of what they want that character to be. So it's a huge responsibility, and it's not something that should be taken lightly, and it's not something that you should just expect people to like. And that's part of the challenge of being part of something so mega.
A couple who met as children have celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary. Ruth and Arthur Morby from Banbury marked the milestone at Larkrise Care Centre, where they have lived since the start of the year. The couple, aged 89 and 91, enjoyed an afternoon tea with a homemade cake and received a card from the King. Arthur met Ruth when he moved from Farnborough to Swellcliff in Banbury. They married in April 1955. Mr. Morby said, "I met Ruth when I was 8. We played together as kids. I was 21 when we married at Swellcliff Church. The reception at the village hall cost £30. It was a lot of money in those days. I saved to pay for it all myself. The couple have 2 daughters, Lynn and Jane, 4 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren and 3 great-great-grandchildren. They lived in Brookfield Rise and Tadmarton before moving to Larkrise Care Centre in January 2025. Mr. Morby worked for 29 years making switchgear for power stations. After being made redundant, he became a gardener for manor houses in Hook Norton and Tadmarton. Mrs. Morby was a homemaker, raising their daughters and caring for their grandchildren. She shared their secret to a successful relationship. We like to take each day as it comes, and we try to be happy."
The famous trains, the Flying Scotsman and the Pendennis Castle, are coming to Oxfordshire this year. Two of the most storied locomotives in British railway history are set to reunite this spring at Didcot Railway Centre. The world-famous Flying Scotsman will appear alongside the legendary Pendennis Castle from Monday, May the 12th to Monday, June the 2nd. The event marks the first time in decades that these two steam giants, each with a unique place in rail history, have stood side by side. Bringing over a century of steam-powered heritage roaring back to life, their shared history runs deeper than steel. Both were once owned and cared for by the late Sir William McAlpine, a key figure in Britain's railway preservation movement. Now, for a limited time only, they'll stand shoulder to shoulder once more on the tracks where history lives and breathes. Pendennis Castle's story is one of performance and pride. Built by the Great Western Railway in 1924, The Castle-class locomotive famously held its own against LNER's finest during trials in the 1920s, including a now legendary appearance alongside Flying Scotsman in the British Empire Exhibition in 1925.
An Oxfordshire district council has issued a warning of a tech scam asking people for payments on garden permits. South Oxfordshire district council alerted residents to a scam message requesting payment for garden waste permits targeting people in Oxfordshire. A spokesperson for the district council said, "We are not contacting anyone via text message for garden waste permits. If you receive a message like this, please delete it and block the number. If anyone is concerned that a communication they have received is suspicious, please contact us." Sharing the message from the council online, Councillor Ian Snowden of Didcot expressed his shock at the new fraudulent scheme. Councillor Snowden said, "Please be aware of this scam. I have no idea how these people live with themselves." There was also one where you receive a text message about paying a parking fine. Oxfordshire County Council never text either requesting the fine be paid. Oxfordshire County Council has advice on its website advising residents on how to protect themselves against scams. They listed some common scam attempts, including mail or postal scams, like fake lotteries and private draws, offers of investment, clairvoyant letters and health cures.
An Oxford University degree will be awarded to a Maori princess more than 100 years after she originally began her studies. Makareti Maggie Papakura enrolled at the prestigious institution to study for a degree in anthropology in 1922. She is believed to have been the first Indigenous woman to enrol at the University of Oxford. Her groundbreaking research explored the customs of the Maori Te Arawa Iwi, her people, from a female perspective. The New Zealand-born student died suddenly 3 weeks before she took her thesis examination in April 1930. Oxford University's Vice-Chancellor, Professor Irene Tracy, will award the degree of MPhil in Anthropology at a Sheldonian Theatre ceremony. The princess was born Margaret Pattison Tom to an English father, William Tom, and a Maori mother, Pia Ngarotu Te Rihi. Her degree was at Pitt Rivers Museum, as well as at the Society of Home Students, which is now St Anne's College. The BBC adds that Papakura's Indigenous worldview earned her the respect of many Oxford academics at the time, according to the university. It was also said by the university that she was celebrated by members of Maori communities and researchers worldwide.
A skydive has raised thousands of pounds for a charity that supports young carers across Oxfordshire. Two employees from Barrett and David Wilson Homes, construction director Craig Leverton and assistant site manager Dean Crane, leapt from 10,000 feet to raise money for Be Free Young Carers. The jump raised £4,000 for the charity, which the home builder matched. Mr. Crane said, "The skydive was incredible. It was one of the most freeing experiences of my life so far. It's extremely humbling to know that we've made a difference to so many young lives." Be Free Young Carers, based near Harwell, is the only charity in Oxfordshire dedicated to supporting young carers aged 8 to 17. With around 12,000 young carers in the county, the charity provides recreational, emotional and social support.
Four runners have helped to raise almost £10,000 for a children's charity by completing the London Marathon. The Mulberry Bush charity, based in Standlake near Witney, had four runners take part on Sunday, April the 27th. They were Luke Hearn, Fliss Simmons and Beth Burrows, who all work for the charity, and Matt Scales. They completed the course alongside 56,640 other runners, breaking the record for the largest number of finishers in a marathon. The charity said the money raised will help to change the lives of children affected by trauma. Through various services, it works to support all those troubled and traumatised as children. It runs a non-maintained residential special school and delivers training courses available to all those working with children and young people. Staff from across the charity supported the runners on the day with cheer points around the course. Mr. Hearn, Senior Marketing and Communications Manager at the Mulberry Bush, said, "I've been working at the Mulberry Bush charity for just over 2 years and have been blown away by the incredible impact it has in transforming the lives of all those affected by childhood trauma."
A new hedge has been planted at a Headington school with help from some of the school's children. St Joseph's Catholic Primary School on Headley Way has planted a new hedge of eastern white cedar between the early years foundation stage playground and the road. The hedge was planted by parent volunteers to improve air quality in the playground, with the plants chosen for their air purifying properties and ability to absorb harmful pollutants. This green initiative will help to reduce the effects of nearby traffic emissions and noise pollution, making the playground a safer and more peaceful space for the children to play and learn. Head teacher Jess Tweedle said, "We believe that teaching students about the importance of clean air and a healthy environment is crucial for their development as responsible global citizens. By involving pupils in planting and caring for the hedge, we're helping them understand how nature can work to protect our health." Pupils from the school's Eco Council will continue to monitor air quality in the vicinity of the school using test kits provided by Oxford City Council. The hedge planting is just one of many steps St Joseph's Catholic Primary School is taking to create a cleaner, healthier environment.
Gary Rowett says he will look to strengthen every aspect of the team after Oxford United secured Sky Bet Championship football for the 2025-26 season. The Ewes beat Sunderland 2-0 at home thanks to goals from Ben Nelson and Mikael Helic, meaning the side will enter the final day of the season 4 points above the relegation zone. United head coach Rowett is anticipating a busy summer transfer window now that championship survival has been confirmed. He said, "Every aspect of the team you want to try and improve to help the players here. We need to strengthen the squad. We've already had those conversations, but the conversations become a little bit more real when you've actually achieved it. We know roughly what we want to do. Ed Waldron, head of football operations, and his team have worked tirelessly to get to this point. We'll speak to Tim Williams, chief executive, and we'll speak to Grant Ferguson, chairman. But I think at the moment, we just want to be able to breathe for 3 or 4 days. Rowett added, "If I'm being honest, I didn't really have a plan for League One. That's not a plan that I thought about because it's not the sort of thing you really want to think about. I felt we had an incredible opportunity. There were a number of times where I did wonder whether we'd be able to get this over the line or whether I was going to have personally another last day drama. The last 3 seasons have been pretty cruel to me. We were 30 minutes from the playoffs at Millwall and lost. We went down last season after winning the last game, and this season I thought I wasn't sure I could take another one. It's been fantastic. The group is such a good group. We've got players that have been left out of the squad who are celebrating with the rest of the lads. And I think that, to me, tells you a little bit about the spirit around the place. That's a special thing for me. I'm pleased for everyone else that we have a chance to build something a little bit more sustainable in the championship.
A high-end shoe shop has been permitted to open in Oxford's High Street. Loke Shoemakers submitted a planning application to Oxford City Council for new signage and a new shopfront at 16 High Street. The unit was previously occupied by outdoor and travel clothing specialist Rohan. The building in question was first built in 1773. The planning application involves removing the old Rohan branding and adding a replacement sign. In its decision report, the City Council said, "The Council considers that the proposal, subject to the conditions imposed, would accord with the special character, setting, features of special architectural or historic interest of the listed building. It has taken into consideration all other material matters, including matters raised in response to consultation and publicity. The Council considers that the proposal, subject to the conditions imposed, would accord with the special character and appearance of the conservation area." Loke Shoemakers was founded by the brothers John, Thomas and William Loke in 1880 in an outbuilding at Thomas Loke's house at 62 King Street, Kettering. Northamptonshire is the centre of the English shoemaking industry.
An Oxford priest appointed a cardinal could be chosen as the new pope. Experts are refusing to discount Cardinal Timothy Radcliffe as the next pope, with the conclave to decide the next head of the Vatican set to begin next week. The 79-year-old will be locked inside the Sistine Chapel with the other 135 electors from Wednesday, as billions of people across the globe wait for news of the release of white smoke that indicates a new pope has been chosen. Though in theory any baptised Catholic man can be pope, on every occasion for the past 500 years it has been a cardinal. Timothy Radcliffe was raised to the College of Cardinals in December 2024, having previously been a master of the Dominican Order. He stood down as head of the Dominicans in 2001, after which he took up residency as an ordinary member of the community at Blackfriars Priory on St Giles. However, his association with Oxford started long before that. Born in London, he studied at St John's College in the 60s and has taught scriptures in the city. In 2003, Oxford University awarded the priest an honorary Doctor in Divinity, with Chancellor Chris Patten saying, "We feel that he is especially linked with us since his character shows him to be truly English." He has also been named an honorary fellow of his alma mater, St John's College. Bookkeeper Bette Victor gives him a 30-1 chance of becoming the next pope following the death of Pope Francis on Easter Monday. While this is some distance behind the favourite, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, who is at 2-1, it shows his candidacy hasn't been totally discounted and places him within the 30 most likely to be selected. Equally, this gives Cardinal Radcliffe more of a chance of being pope than Manchester United have of winning next year's Premier League, 33-1 at Betfair. Cardinal Radcliffe has indicated that he isn't seeking the position, saying that the Holy Spirit is far too wise to even think of me as pope for the shortest moment. However, he recently told BBC Radio 4 that he wasn't daunted by the choice. In the interview, he spoke of his admiration for Pope Francis and hopes that his successor will continue his work. He said, "We really need somebody like Francis who says everybody is welcome." The theologian explained that the Pope had shown his welcoming spirit by opening the doors of the Vatican to a diverse range of individuals including transgender and gay people.
A group of Oxfordshire MPs backed a motion to create a crumbling hospitals task force to help fix the area's decaying NHS buildings in need of repair earlier this week. The Liberal Democrats, Ollie Glover, Leila Moran, Callum Miller, Charlie Maynard and Freddie Van Mierlo called on all MPs in the region to back their party's motion ahead of a vote last week. A total of 309 MPs voted against the motion, while 77 voted in favour. It looked to reverse the government's delays to the new hospital programme, which saw 18 of the 40 projects pushed back from the original 2030 deadline. The motion also proposed the creation of a crumbling hospitals task force, which would drive forward repairs from the heart of government. Under the revised new hospital programme, construction of the Royal Berkshire Hospital, which serves many Oxfordshire residents, is not expected to begin for at least a decade, despite the urgent need for modern facilities. The Cancer Centre is 164 years old, and every week an operation is cancelled due to issues such as power cuts, water supply failures, broken lifts or malfunctioning temperature control systems. Warnford Hospital in Headington, which provides inpatient care for people with mental health conditions, operates out of buildings dating back to the Georgian period. The spaces are difficult to heat, and maintaining safety and security is a constant challenge, the MPs argued. Building a new Warnford would cost significantly less than constructing a typical physical health hospital, yet the project has not been included in the government's new hospital programme. This is despite the government's repeated commitment to treat mental health with the same priority as physical health, they added. Mr Van Mierlo, MP for Henley and Thames, said, "For years, patients in our community have had to put up with crumbling hospital buildings after years of broken promises under the Conservatives. Now the Labour government has failed to deliver the change they promised and kicked the can down the road on fixing our local health services. I've heard from countless patients and staff who are really worried about the impact on local health care. No one should have to worry about crumbling roofs or dilapidated buildings when they are being cared for in hospitals. The Liberal Democrats will hold the government's feet to the fire on this and put pressure on them to speed up the rebuilding of local hospitals. It is critical that we upgrade our health services so people can finally access the care they deserve." Mr Van Mierlo said it was a dereliction of duty for other Thames Valley MPs not to back the motion.
A flock of 8 chickens have become the newest members of an Oxford primary school. St John Fisher Primary School in Littlemore has introduced the chickens as part of its CAFOD Live Simply accreditation, which encourages Catholic schools to live simply, sustainably and in solidarity with the poor. The school is housing the chickens in a large walk-in run and a coop provided by a supportive family. Ornia McCarthy, RE lead and deputy head, said, "These chickens will broaden the curriculum offer here at St John Fisher, allowing the children a multitude of learning opportunities. Along with our school allotment, this strengthens our sustainability and brings children closer to the environment. They will be learning to care for the animals and share their produce with our local community." The project was led by pupils, with the school's faith ambassadors and school council driving the change.
three trees which provided inspiration for a popular trilogy of fantasy novels have received specialist treatment in a bid to improve their health and condition. The fastigiate hornbeam trees on Sunderland Avenue in North Oxford were planted by Oxford Preservation Trust in 1937. The trees on what is a stretch of the Oxford Ring Road provided inspiration to city author Sir Philip Pullman for his trilogy, His Dark Materials. Concerns have been raised by local residents about the declining condition of some of the trees, prompting Hannah Brockwell, Green Spaces Officer at Oxford Preservation Trust, to contact the County Council for support. Following an assessment, it was found the trees were under stress due to soil compaction and exposure to salt and oil from passing traffic. To combat this, the County Council initiated a trial treatment involving soil decompaction using compressed air combined with a seaweed-based solution to improve the soil and encourage root growth. The root plate was mulched with a layer of wood chip to improve the soil conditions. The trial has been carried out on three trees in total by Ringrose Tree Services, funded by Oxford Preservation Trust and the County Council. In a further effort to support tree health and improve soil conditions, the County Council has also adjusted the mowing schedule in the area from four or five times a year to just once annually. After hearing about the initiative, Sir Philip said the magnificent line of fastigiate hornbeam trees along Sunderland Avenue has been familiar to many of us who live in Oxford, as well as those who drive along the Ring Road on the way to somewhere else. It's one of the most attractive parts of the road, both in summer when the trees are in full leaf and in winter when their beautiful shapes are clearly visible. It seemed to me such a vivid and splendid sight that I couldn't resist writing about it in my trilogy, His Dark Materials, part of which is set in Oxford. It would be a terrible shame if these trees were allowed to decline and die for want of some care and attention. Miss Brockwell added, "The trees on Sunderland Avenue are such a well-known feature of the city. Oxford Preservation Trust are very pleased to support Oxfordshire County Council with carrying out this trial. We hope that it is a great success and that it gets different organisations thinking in a joined-up way about how best to look after these important assets of our city. While the trial aims for a full recovery for the three trees most affected, there is a possibility that if only partial improvement is seen, the size of the trees may need to be reduced at a later date."
A mural has been created in Blackbird Lees by a group of pupils from a special educational needs school. The Orion Academy pupils painted the mural as part of a community art project to brighten up the area. The idea came from the Orion School Council, who decided to decorate the Peabody Housing Development site fencing facing the school. After presenting their idea to the team overseeing the site, the pupils chose a nature theme, and Peabody provided the art materials. Over 2 days, the mural featuring flowers, butterflies and bees was painted by all pupils at the school. One Year 10 pupil said, "We painted flowers on the fence to make it appealing for the community, and the whole school can see it now every day." Another added, "It was really good doing the mural. I liked helping out and putting our own designs together."
Thames Water must complete water main work in Oxford's Botley Road before a new walkway can be completed. Network Rail closed the Botley Road at the rail bridge in April 2023 as part of a £161 million scheme to revitalise the station. The project has been delayed numerous times and is costing more than its original budget. The road is not due to open until August 2026. A new walkway at the rail bridge for pedestrians and cyclists will be completed by August, but it will only serve the north side of the road closest to the rail station. A spokesperson for Network Rail said, "We are on track to open the new Northern Walkway cycleway in August 2025, greatly improving access for all, with Botley Road reopening by the end of August 2026. However, Network Rail explained that there is still work that needs to be completed before the new walkway can be built. This includes Thames Water diverting the main water connections. A Network Rail spokesman said, "There are two pipes, the large water main that helps transport water supplies across the city. There is also a smaller water main that also runs under the railway bridge. This water pipe provides the water supply to streets in the immediate local area. These pipes have to be completed before the sewer can be diverted due to the risk of contamination between clean water and sewage. 16 concrete piles that are 42 metres deep have been installed in the ground to support the new walkway." A Network Rail spokesman added, "The tops of these piles need to be concreted to form caps which will spread the load of the bridge and the walkway, cycleway structure that will sit on top of them. At the same time, we are installing the drainage needed for the new walkway. The walkway itself will be a concrete box, which will be built on site. The overall scheme includes replacing the rail bridge with better access provided for pedestrians and cyclists, creating a new western entrance to the station, and building a new platform to improve east-west rail links." In January, Rail Minister Lord Hendy visited to announce that the Botley Road would not reopen at the rail bridge until August next year. Business leaders gathered at the centre to protest about the ongoing road closure. Following his visit, monthly meetings are now held at the King's Centre in Oseney Mead to update residents on the scheme's progress, and the latest meeting took place on Wednesday. It is understood that the pedestrian stroke cycle walkway on the south side of Botley Road will be completed in time for when the road fully reopens. Susanna Pressell, City Councillor for Oseney and St Thomas Ward, who is also a county councillor, said earlier this week she was hopeful contractors would meet the deadline for the completion of the walkway on the north side of the rail bridge by the end of August. She added that she has told Network Rail and the County Council that she is worried about some aspects of the new walkway. "When both walkways are open and when the road is also open, I think they will work quite well," she said. "Until then, things will be difficult because all pedestrians and all cyclists in both directions will have to share the one tunnel. I tend to be a glass half full person, but I hope I am not being over optimistic when I say that I am fairly confident that Network Rail will succeed in meeting their deadline and that we will have our smart new walkway by August of this year."
Hollywood film director Tim Burton is selling his £4.5 million mansion in Oxfordshire. The star is well known for his gothic style and for directing several classic films, including Beetlejuice and its recent sequel. He was also behind the Michael Keaton-led Batman films, Edward Scissorhands, Corpse Bride and The Nightmare Before Christmas. Mr. Burton moved to Sutton Courtenay in 2006 when he and his then-partner Helena Bonham Carter purchased Mill House. The mansion is now up for sale with estate agent Savills for a whopping £4.5 million. 4 miles from Abingdon, the home on the River Thames features 8 bedrooms. Built in 1741, Mill House showcases the stunning classic design and symmetry of the Georgian period. Original architectural and design details abound throughout the house. These include rooms with decorative plaster cornices, floor-to-ceiling large-pane sash windows, dado rails and deep skirtings. Jeremy Clarkson wants Top Gear to make a comeback and return to the BBC. The TV host presented the BBC show, as well as Prime Video's The Grand Tour, with James May and Richard Hammond for over 2 decades. This came to an end last year with the final episode of the latter, while Mr. Clarkson is now focused on his diddly squat farm in Oxfordshire. Top Gear changed hosts in the years following the famous trio's exit, with Freddie Flintoff, Paddy McGuinness and Chris Harris. The former England cricketer was involved in a huge crash, though, while filming the popular show in December 2022. The accident left him with significant facial injuries and broken ribs, and the star received £9 million in compensation. Top Gear production was then ceased for the foreseeable future by the BBC, who deemed it inappropriate to continue. Mr. Clarkson has now commented on the future of Top Gear while talking to The Times. "It would be sad if it never came back," the 65-year-old said. "There's room for a car programme at the moment because cars are changing so fast and electric cars are coming in and nobody really understands what's a good one and what isn't." However, despite fans' excitement over the potential return, Mr. Clarkson confirmed that he had no interest in hosting the show again. "I just don't understand or like electric cars, so I wouldn't be interested in doing it," he added.
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.